Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
From the Quicken Loans studios, this is the Jim Rome Show, Mortgage Confidently with Quicken Loans. As mentioned, Steve Weish, he is an NFL Network reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at Weish89. You can see Steve on NFL Network's Hall of Fame Saturday. That is coming up tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And he joins us right here on CBS Sports Radio. Steve, it's Grant Napier. How are you?
Grant, I'm great up here in Canton. So getting ready for the gold jacket ceremony tonight, but always good to be on with you.
Hey, it's always great to talk to you. Let's back up and talk about last night first, because I think we were all kind of waiting to see how the officials would call the game with the new helmet rule. Anything stand out to you?
Well, you know, it looked like the first two that they called really looked like they were what the league is trying to get out of the game. And I think on both instances, a player was being held up by one defender and another defender came in with the helmet and hit the offensive player with the helmet. Those were called penalties, and those seemed, you know, pretty legitimate. But then you had one later in the end zone, which wasn't necessarily the lowering the helmet rule. That was more the defenseless receiver rule. That was kind of a questionable one. But the bigger issue here is, like, every other team, 31 teams in the NFL, were watching that game to see how it was going to be officiated and to see what they were looking for. And, you know, the officials are going to be the ones most under scrutiny with this rule. Sure, the rule itself is being talked about now, but how it's going to be enforced and when it's called on an offensive player, how that's going to be enforced, you know, and where things move from there. So, you know, I'm among those in the chorus who are saying we're probably going to see a lot of these calls in the preseason until they really figure out how they want to call it in the regular season and how teams adjust to it being called. Because, as we know, it's just so hard in the heat of the moment, a bang-bang play, for players to necessarily not react by maybe putting their head down or coming in and making a tackle. You know, they'd rather get the flag instead of letting a guy go for a game-breaking touchdown or something like that. So this is going to be a process, but as we've seen with rule changes seemingly every year in the NFL, players adjust, coaches adjust, and officials adjust.
We are talking with Steve Weish in Canton, Ohio, getting ready for the Hall of Fame inductions. I guess it would be unfair for me to ask you if you have a favorite that you're looking forward to this weekend, because you're covering everyone, but is there one storyline that stands out above the rest?
Well, first off, the gold jacket ceremony is tonight, and that, having done this for years with the network and with the Hall of Fame, that's the most emotional evening for these players, because they come out, they get welcomed in by the gold jackets, they get their gold jacket, and then they finally realize, okay, I'm in the club. In terms of speeches, not really. I mean, I think everyone's going to have their own story to tell. And there's a lot of things, some of these players that we don't know about, that they tell in speeches like this. So I think the big joke up here, the big question up here, is how long Ray Lewis's speech will go. But we know it's going to be good. We're going to be tuning in to watch, not necessarily for the time, but we know it's going to be good. But all of these are going to be fantastic. And I will say this, I am looking forward to hearing from Randy Moss, because hearing him talk now as opposed to when he was a younger player, I mean, and seeing him kind of encapsulate his life in retrospect is a really cool thing. So I think Randy Moss's speech might be the sleeper great speech of the night.
Let's talk about some of the things going on in the NFL right now. And in Oakland, Khalil Mack is not in camp. And Reggie McKenzie has said, hey, we don't negotiate with players that are under contract that aren't in camp. If you remember a year ago, Donald Penn, their outstanding left tackle, held out for almost 4 weeks, came back in, and then got a deal done after week one. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I don't see Khalil Mack coming into camp. See, the thing, Donald Penn is kind of at the end of his career. So he came in because he knew if he wanted to get an extension for a couple more years, that's one thing. This is a young, dominant player who's got a long career in the NFL. And if he comes into camp, then the football player in him is going to be, he's going to be around his buddies, he's going to be around his teammates, and then he might be somewhat vulnerable in these contract negotiations. So, one, I do not see him going there. Two, and speaking with some folks at the Raiders, I mean, they were telling me that there really have not been any conversations, which is kind of stunning to me. So, you know, they let Khalil Mack watch a lot of players like Derek Carr ahead of him get big contracts and get paid. And so I would think sometime in the next week or so that that the conversations about getting Mac into camp should accelerate. If they don't, then maybe this is going to be a stalemate where Khalil Mack plays this year on the final year of his deal, and then they get into the ugly franchise tag stare down. But I don't think they can have that in their locker room this year. I think they need to get a deal done and get a deal done within the next week or two. Because remember, he hasn't been there for this new coaching staff. He knows really nothing about what they're doing with this new defense. So for him to be effective, he probably needs to be in there next couple of weeks. But the team, you know, they need to find a way to reach out and not really take this hard stance of, well, we don't negotiate if you're not here, because that's when things get ugly.
Well, you know, you talk about ugly, and perception is not always reality, but I'll ask you, the lack of communication or no communication from day one between John Gruden and Khalil Mack, does that surprise you?
Yes, absolutely, because I know a lot of coaches don't want to get involved with contract negotiations. That's not their thing. But there's nothing wrong with a coach calling up and saying, hey, we love you, we got this going on out here. Just having a conversation for the player to know that at least his coach is about him being a football player. And, you know, even if the coach does not step into the contract negotiation realm, this coach cares about me. And it's also good for the coach, you know, the player can still be engaged, even though he's not there. Sean McVay's done it with Aaron Donald. We've seen a lot of coaches reach out to players in these situations and not necessarily get into the contract talks, because that's not their ballpark. That's not what they do. But at least showing, you know, both ways that, hey, we want you here. Here's what's going on, X, Y, Z. Just some lines of communication help diffuse ill feelings that can often build up in these holdouts.
And you wonder if that's going on down with the Rams and Aaron Donald. And, you know, again, Kevin Demoff said that he goes, I don't think their demands are unrealistic. He said, I think they see their client at a certain point that they value at, and we see it at a different point. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Well, those are negotiations. And from everything I've heard and speaking to people in that situation, it is not acrimonious.
Mm-hmm.
That because there has been communication, they are talking, they're trying to figure it out, they're negotiating a deal. And at some point, someone's going to have to give. Both sides are going to have to give. And it's Aaron Donald's in a weird situation because he held out for a long time last year, and there's a rule in the new collective bargaining agreement that players need to be in camp by 30 days before the first game or else they lose an accrued season. And Aaron Donald lost an accrued season. So if he does that again this year, which he seems like he's willing to do, technically, if he doesn't get a new deal done, when his deal expires after the season, he'll be a restricted free agent. And then the money game changes a little bit if it gets, you know, that ugly. But that's a hypothetical. I don't see that in any way, shape, or form happening. I think that they will come to some type of compromise over the next couple of weeks. And Aaron Donald's situation will come in where the feelings, there'll be no hard feelings between the team and Aaron Donald because there has been communication, and I think that's key.
We are talking with Steve Wyche, NFL Network reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at Wyche89. We go to Green Bay and we talk about the Packers, and obviously with Aaron Rodgers healthy, it's a whole different story, but he doesn't have his go-to guy now, Jordy Nelson, who was in Oakland. When you look at this Packers offense, yes, we always know it's all about Aaron Rodgers, but what do you think about the skill people that he has with him?
Well, Devontae Adams has quietly been a fantastic wide receiver, you know, and he's been the guy, you know, because Randall Cobb has been off and on.
Yep.
So, look, Jimmy Graham, when we're talking about him, he's going to be a fantastic red zone target. But somebody else does need to step up. They need to have somebody else besides Devontae Adams step up. And, you know, interestingly, the Packers tend to do that. I mean, Jordy Nelson was not someone who came out of college and everyone thought was going to be great. So we'll see how things go with Aaron Rodgers in the lineup to see if he can throw guys open and make other guys step up their games. The key thing is defensively. And I've spoken to some people there who feel that they have an opportunity to actually be really good defensively, especially on the back end. A lot of young guys, but they're changing the scheme, which the guys up front, I spoke to one of their defensive tackles who really feels that this new scheme fits their skill set. And Mike Pettine's really going to let some guys make plays on that defensive line, some guys who are very capable, and that's going to create pressure. And then that way, get takeaways and get Aaron Rodgers a short field, and he could be more effective. And despite waiting for a second option to open up, you know, they've got some things that could work offensively as long as he's got the ball.
Steve, I talked to Hugh Jackson on this show about a month ago, and we talked to him about Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield. And I don't have a crystal ball any more than you do, but I wanted to get your opinion on at what point do you think we will see Baker Mayfield? Or I maybe even should ask, when should we see Baker Mayfield? How do you think that's all going to turn out in Cleveland?
It depends on wins and losses. You know, if they start out 0-4 or 1-4, 1-5, you know, then you could see Hugh Jackson possibly let go, and then they'll make the change, you know, at quarterback. But right now, you know, they really feel that Tyrod Taylor, his professionalism and the way he conducts business has really trickled down to the locker room. So they like him. But I was actually there a couple days ago and spoke to a couple coaches, and they love the way Baker Mayfield is playing as well. I mean, he's surprising people. So they think he's not quite ready because he's a rookie. We'll see in preseason how he progresses. But I think they think he's a little bit ahead of the curve than what they'd anticipated. So, you know, look, I think ideally the Browns would like to go through the season with Tyrod Taylor as their quarterback. But the interesting dynamic about that is that means that they're probably going to finish 8-8 or better. Then what do? Do you get rid of Tyrod Taylor? How do you keep moving? Because now you're in the dynamic of, hey, well, we saw a lot of progress with this guy. Why do we want to move off of him? Which they probably would do anyway. We've seen it before. I don't know if Baker Mayfield plays at all this season. But, you know, if the losses do stack up and their schedule is really, really tough, I think we would probably see Baker Mayfield towards the back end of the season.
You know, and the other thing that I've never understood, we saw it 2 years ago with the Chargers and Joey Bosa. There's always one team that can't get their player done due to the offset language or whatever. And now we're talking about the Bears and Smith. And I know fans go, wait a minute, there are 32 teams in the NFL and everyone else can get their rookies in. But every year we always seem there's one team. Why is that, Steve?
Well, there's a team that digs in, and I know with the Chargers, who were in San Diego then, theirs was, why are we going to allocate bonus money to Joey Bosa this way when we didn't do it for Keenan Allen, who wanted the same thing, who we just gave an extension to, and we didn't do it for other players? So if we do it for Joey Bosa, then we're going to have to start doing it for other players. Well, sometimes you have to say, so what? Sometimes you have to say, this is a special player, we need to get him into camp. We'll bend the rules for him. We'll break protocol for him. And I know with Roquan Smith in Chicago, he's a guy they're counting on to come in and be a fantastic player. And if the sticking point is some language in a contract that you don't want to give him because then in future years you're going to have to give it to other people, then you have to ask yourself, okay, are we going to really die on the hill of not having our number eight, our eighth overall pick not here because of that? Or can we bend the rules for him? Or can we say, you know what, looking down the road, we can bend it for everybody. So, I mean, it's just interesting on how teams, you know, the stake they put in the ground and that they're not going to lift up, what that issue is. And right now, that issue is, you know, some of the guaranteed language during the guaranteed bonus language in that contract.
You know, final thing for you, because you say put the stake in the ground, and I want to circle back to what we were talking about at the beginning with Reggie McKenzie and Khalil Mack. You know, you put the stake in the ground, but Khalil Mack, as you said, is not Donald Penn, okay? And so maybe you do things differently. But when you're a front office executive like a Reggie McKenzie and you say we are not negotiating with players that are under contract that don't come to work, at what point do you back yourself up into a corner where you can't get out of that corner?
Very soon. Very soon. I mean, look, Khalil Mack is a great player. And, you know, for John Gruden to come out and say, like, hey, he's a great player, but our defense wasn't good anyway.
Yeah, come on.
That doesn't help things.
No, it doesn't.
That does not help
things. It's mind-boggling, you know, isn't it, Steve? Steve, isn't that mind-boggling?
It is. I mean, so now if a deal does get done, he's got to put some feelings aside. And Khalil's not that guy in terms of he's a prideful guy, but he's not somebody you have to worry about like being a pain in the butt, or at least he wasn't because he hadn't been faced with these circumstances. Now you don't know the mindset of the player you have coming in.
Steve, it's always great. Enjoy your weekend in Canton. And again, you can see Steve on NFL Network's Hall of Fame Saturday at 6 o'clock Eastern. We'll catch up with you soon, I'm sure. Thanks again, and be well, Steve.
Always good, Grant.
All right, good stuff right there from Steve Wyche, NFL Network. I don't know what's going on in Oakland. I really do not know what's going on in Oakland, other than the constant theme year after year in Oakland is, boy, that doesn't make sense. Gee, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. This really does not make sense. I mean, you have a coach that just signed a 10-year, $100 million deal saying that about arguably, you know, one of the top two or three defensive players in the league. I mean, come on now. That's not a great way to start off that relationship. I don't get it. All right, open segment when we come back, Clone. So get on deck right now. 800-636-8686. Grant Napier in the jungle filling in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Hey, I want to tell you that Tiger returns to Firestone for the first time since 2014 and joined the world's best, including Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth at the World Golf Championships Bridgestone Invitational this weekend on CBS. Boy, I got to love this one. This is a beauty. This was emailed to us at rome@haveittake.com. Hey, Grant, you saw Mickey Mantle play? After the game, did you drive your Model T over to the speakeasy to do the Charleston with your dame and maybe pitch a little woo if you were lucky? That is from Jim. Thank you very much, Jim. Kind of. Hey, let me tell you something, okay? And I tell people this all the time. I grew up in New York, and as a kid, and still to this day, but we had season tickets to both the Giants and the Jets. And I literally was at an NFL game every single Sunday. And I am not exaggerating. Every single Sunday. I would either be at Yankee Stadium watching the Giants. We had tickets in the bleachers. Or I'd be at Shea Stadium. And when I was growing up as a kid, the Giants were awful. And the Jets were really good. And the Jets, that was when Joe Namath in 69 won the Super Bowl and everything. But I hated the Jets. All right? And the season ticket holders at Chase Stadium would get on my dad, like, because one week I'd be rooting for the Bills. 2 weeks later, I'd be rooting for the Patriots. Then I'd be rooting for, you know, the Colts. And they hated me at Chase Stadium. But anyway, to show you how things have changed, when I went to the Jets games in that era when Joe Namath was the quarterback, and they had a really good team. Emerson Boozer, Matt Snell were the running backs. They had good. They had a right tackle, number 72. You can look it up. His name was Sherman Plunkett. And I remember going to watch Sherman Plunkett play with the New York Jets because he was a marvel, because he was 320 pounds. And he was so much bigger than everybody else on the football field. Everyone used to talk about Sherman Plunkett, the right tackle for the New York Jets. And it was probably 15 years ago. I did an interview with Joe Namath. Up at Lake Tahoe. And we talked about Sherman Plunkett for about 10 years. And what's crazy about this is I'm not exaggerating, folks. He was so much bigger than everybody else on the offensive line. Like, he would come out of the huddle and people would, like, they would point at him and they would talk about him. And now think about where the game is. You know, if you're not 300 pounds, you can't play on the line, right? I mean, this guy was 320 and he was playing in an era where the other offensive linemen were 250 pounds. So, yeah, I am old. What can I tell you? You know, what can I tell you? But I will tell you, I grew up watching at Yankee Stadium. I mean, I had a conversation. I was so blessed a year ago. It was one of the great unexpected treats that I've ever had. My wife and I went to a friend's birthday party in Dallas, Texas. And sitting at our table was Roger Staubach and his wife. And they could not have been more nice. And we had such a great talk. And I was telling Roger that I was from New York and that one of the real treats was to watch him play. Because Bob Hayes, to me, was one of the great marvels in that era. Bob Hayes was the fastest human on earth. Bob Hayes was the fastest guy on the planet. And I said to Roger Staubach, I asked him, I said, hey, I'm just curious, as a football player, did you like going in the Yankee Stadium? And he went off. He was like, oh, man, he goes, that was my favorite place to play. A lot of people don't realize this, but I played baseball at the Naval Academy and I played football. And he said, I didn't even start playing football until I was in high school. And we got into this conversation. And he said, do you know that my longest touchdown pass ever was to Bob Hayes at Yankee Stadium? And I said, yeah, I do know because I was at the game. And we talked about all of the great memories of that era with Roger Staubach and, you know, Bob Hayes. So, and I watched Jim Brown play in person. And I watched, you know, Johnny Unitas play in person. And, I mean, through that whole era of the National Football League, I mean, I can go on and on and on about, you know, some of the great players. And, you know, it's not like today. If you weren't at the game, it's not like you were watching games elsewhere. You had, you know, the national game on with Kurt Gowdy and Al DeRogatis, and they would always do the AFC game, and it was normally the Raiders, and it was, but I mean, you didn't watch football the way it is now. You watched, if you were lucky, you know, maybe two games, and that's it, you know, but we were at a game every week. It was great. That's an era of the NFL that I miss, and I say that because, you know, you played every down. You know, there weren't guys running off on and off the field all the time. And you had, well, your team was your team. And I grew up, and I've always said this about sports. I was one of that was very critical of Kevin Durant going to the Warriors. I love Kevin Durant. I think he's a great person. He's a great player. He's one of the most talented players that I've ever seen. But I don't have respect for a guy that goes into that situation. That's just me. And so I'm going to circle back to the era of where it used to be. When your team was bad, your team could only get good by drafting, because they weren't free agency was really not in existence, and there weren't a lot of trades in the National Football League. So if you drafted well, you could become a good team. If you drafted poorly, then you would not be a good team. For the most part, you had very little. You know, you wouldn't grab a player from this team or that team. That didn't happen very often. So what happens when your team became good? Like, it meant so much more from a fan's perspective. And if you're a Cubs fan, you know what I'm talking about. Or if you were a Red Sox fan and you finally won in 2004, you know what I'm talking about. And for me, growing up as a diehard Giants fan, when they got good and finally won a Super Bowl in 1987, January 25th to be exact, and I was at the game, and I'll never forget it. It just, I don't know, means so much more than it does today with all the player movement. I get the fact that things change, and I'm fine with that. But boy, that era back then, whether you were a football fan, maybe not as much in baseball, because free agency really took off in the 70s in baseball. And again, you look at the Yankees and all the players they got, and they had a Catfish Hunter, and they had, you know, all those players, you know, back in the 70s. But I would say this, and Reggie Jackson, and we can go on and on. Football wasn't like that. And you know, if you watch football in that era of that 60s and the 70s, you know, if your team was good, it's because they drafted good. It's not because they went out and paid this guy and they paid that guy from other teams. It wasn't like that. So I do miss that. I miss that a lot. All right, when we come back, I want to talk about this. I want you to rank for me the quarterbacks in the NFC North, because I did this yesterday with the NFC West and AFC West. We know that Aaron Rodgers is number one, all right? But I'm going to ask you, would you put Matt Stafford or Kirk Cousins, the second-best quarterback in the NFC North? We know the Bears are still fourth. We get that. Rodgers, no doubt about it. But do you put Cousins of the Vikings now ahead of Matt Stafford as the second-best quarterback in the NFC North? Let me know. 800-636-8686. Right now, though, we've got our latest sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, if you want to compete at the highest level, you need to be strong and stay strong. Like Castrol Edge, it's the strongest full synthetic motor oil, three times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's tested in the Kurt Orban test. Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. All right, 800-636-8686. Got a couple of open segments coming up. I want to hit on a couple of things, and we touched upon this earlier in the show, but I want to get back to it. All right, so tomorrow, and well, we heard from Steve, beginning tonight, the Enshrinees get their gold jackets, and you have Hall of Fame weekend. We saw the game last night. And we had a caller saying that he didn't think Ray Lewis should be in the Hall of Fame, because of the incident that we all know about that happened years ago. And as I said, the Hall of Fame voters cannot take that into account when they vote. And I was talking about Terrell Owens not being there. I think it's a disgrace. I think it's an outrage. And I've just lost all respect for that. I'm sorry. I don't want to hear about the reasoning. I just think it's disrespectful. I think it's just awful. I'm not losing sleep over it. It's not that awful, but I think it's bad. And as I said, is Terrell Owens a Hall of Famer? He's a Hall of Fame player. He's not a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. I don't look at Hall of Fame that way. Hall of Fame numbers, absolutely, unquestionably, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. All right? No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But is he a Hall of Famer? Not in my book. He's not a Hall of Famer. All right? He's not. I just don't think a guy that does that to his quarterbacks and his teammates and everything else, I just don't see it. But I want to get your take on that. So give me a call at 800-636-8686. That's 800-636-8686. All right, I want to talk about quarterbacks. All right? I want to talk about some of the divisions. And I went over the NFC North. I want to talk about Bears, Lions, Packers, Vikings. And then I want to go to the NFC South because I had a big debate. Aaron Rodgers, best quarterback, hands down, NFC North. We don't even have to debate that. I want to know who's the second best quarterback in that division. Would you put Kirk Cousins or would you put Matt Stafford? Both guys that have had trouble in big games. Both guys that have had trouble in big games. Would you put Cousins at number two in that division, or would you put Stafford? And then in the NFC South, I mean, you got to go Drew Brees one, Matt Ryan two, and I'm just curious, do you disagree with that? I mean, you'd have to have Drew Brees one, Cam Newton three, and Winston four. I do not understand the infatuation with Jameis Winston. And I'm not talking about a suspension. I'm not even going there, okay? Think about his play. Think about his inconsistency. Think about, okay, we keep on hearing, well, he's ready for the next step. He's ready for the next step. He's ready for the next step. And then we don't see it. I think he's overrated. I think he's overrated. I mean, to me, we know that, you know, say what you want about Cam. He's won an NFC championship. He's athletic as heck. He's good. I mean... That division's loaded. You got Brees, you got Ryan, and then you got Newton, and then I got to put Tampa Bay fourth. The reason why I'm doing this right now, I love talking about quarterbacks because it is the most important position, I think, in all the sport. I really believe that. I think, you know, again, we talk about it every year. If you don't have a quarterback, then you probably aren't going very far in the NFL. It's very simple. It is very, very simple. Think about teams. Are you going to go back to Trent Dilfer? They had that great defense, right? They had the great defense. And Trent Dilfer, what did we say? Had to manage the game. And he managed the game. And Baltimore won a Super Bowl. How many teams can you talk about? How many quarterbacks can you talk about that were able to do that? People will say, well, Roethlisberger when he was young. All right. But give me a quarterback in the last 15 years. Where you go, boy, you know what? That team just, their quarterback was average at best, and they won a Super Bowl. So give me your thoughts at 800-636-8686 and AFC South. Because to me, this gets very interesting. If you would take Andrew Luck, you take Deshaun Watson, and you take Blake Bortles and Marcus Mariota, how do you rank the quarterbacks in that division? Because Andrew Luck, like, when's the last time we saw Andrew Luck on the field? When's the last time we saw Andrew Luck looking good on the field? Then you got Watson coming off that knee injury, who's back, and boy, is that great to see. And then how do you rate Blake Bortles, who played so well in the playoffs last year? I mean, what was the talk all year? Well, gee, they got to get a new quarterback. They got to get a new quarterback in Jacksonville. And then all of a sudden, Bortles plays well in December, and look what he does. All right? Look what he does in the playoffs. And then how do you look at Marcus Mariota. So give me your thoughts on that. Again, 800-636-8686. And we get to Jonathan in Mississippi. Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thanks for taking my call. Look, I'm just a little, I guess, taken aback how you say that Ray Lewis, we cannot view his off-the-field antics and the crazy storyline behind him to throw him in the Hall of Fame. But then all of a sudden, T.O., you know, he gives his attitude toward the Hall of Fame and everything like that, and all of a sudden he's not a Hall of Famer. You can't have it both ways. Either we vote strictly on the play and what they do on the field, or we throw the whole rest of their lifestyle at voting. So, I mean, that's my take, man. Look, I love the show. Y'all do your thing, but, you know, that's – I don't understand. You can't have it both ways.
I'm not having it both ways. To me, Ray Lewis was not a destructive teammate in his locker room. He was a leader. He was the leader of a defense. The players that play with him would say that. Terrell Owens, I can't say that about. A lot of teammates hated playing with him. He was destructive in the locker room. A lot of quarterbacks hated having him on the team. It was not a good situation in a lot of stops. I'm not talking about your off-the-field stuff, and my criteria for the NFL is a little bit different. I'm talking about within the walls of the team, within the walls of the locker room. You can't compare Ray Lewis and Terrell Owens, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. I mean, once Ray Lewis got his stuff together, I mean, yeah, he had a life-changing experience. You know, he gets his stuff together. He becomes this great leader in the locker room. Yeah, I mean, if we want to give that to him, I can see where you're coming from. But still, T.O. led on the field. You can't argue that. He would take games over, and he would lead his team. Yeah, he had a lot of bullcrap, no doubt about it. You can't argue that. I got you. But, I mean, the dude is a Hall of Famer. Plain and simple, and you said by his numbers. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, though.
Anyway, he is a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying he's got Hall of Fame numbers. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. I just he's a Hall of Famer by his numbers. I don't look at him as a Hall of Famer when I think of my Hall of Fame. I don't think of a guy that is a destructive force in the locker room in a lot of the places that he was at, calling out his quarterback, always me, and everything. To me, that's my definition. I have no problem with what you're saying. I just don't agree with you, and that's fine that you don't agree with me. I agree. You and I both agree he should be in the Hall. I have no issues with that. But it's just he doesn't fit my definition of what I look at as a Hall of Famer because of the destructive nature in the locker room. That's what I'm saying. All right. Thanks very much for the call. We're talking so much about the helmet-to-helmet rule in the National Football League, and I want to bring on Mike Pereira. Of course, you see him each and every Sunday on Fox. You'll actually see him on Fox Sports 1 on Saturdays with college football and everything else. Mike, thanks for coming on the Jim Rome Show. It's Grant Napier. How are you?
I'm good, Grant. How are you doing?
I am doing good. Mike, you're going to speak to me from an official's perspective, and I don't know if you can comment on it from a player's perspective, because I asked Charles Davis yesterday if he thought that this helmet-to-helmet rule was going to be more of a challenge for the officials calling a game or the players playing it. So talk to me from an official's perspective.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be difficult. Really, for the main reason is that this rule now applies to everyone, everywhere on the field. And I think last night we got a little bit of taste of it. And one game is certainly not enough data to presume a trend. But, you know, there were two calls that were made basically in open field for illegal helmet contact, which were both good calls. The player got linear, lowered his head, could have avoided the contact. I thought they were good, solid calls, but they were open field calls. And so you take a look at the hit on the quarterback with 2 minutes to go in the game. You know, maybe Walt Coleman had a blocked out view, but certainly that should have been an illegal hit. And then there were none in the tackle box where you're going to get a lot of helmet contact. So to me, it demonstrated that there is some clarity in the open field, and I was encouraged by that. But it also kind of proved to me that when it gets into a group of people and not an open field, it's going to be very difficult to call. And when called, I think very inconsistent. So it's an issue. Now, that being said, I will say, Grant, from an official standpoint, not a player standpoint, but an official standpoint, I thought I saw a player change. I really thought I saw a culture change last night. There were many instances where you saw last year players leading with the helmet legally on a runner. Maybe it was in leading with the helmet, making contact in the midsection, something like that, which would have been legal last year but is not this year. And I saw players take their head out of it. So it encouraged me. I will say it encouraged me from what I saw, but yet it also proved to me that you know, that there's going to be inconsistency in the rule.
But it is the way it is. This is the way the game is going, and we all have to accept that because that's not changing. I think that is something that we can say unequivocally. But what you're saying is you think we are going to see some inconsistency from crew to crew as the year goes on. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you are. You're going to see some inconsistency from game to game because when you open it up, let's go back. Let's go back to the first helmet rule, which really involved the runner and the tackler, okay? That was basically in the open field. They had an exception to the rule, so it didn't apply in the tackle box, 3 yards either side of the line of scrimmage, which made a lot of sense to me because when you're at the goal line especially, you're trying to get low as a runner, a tackler is trying to get low. Made sense to make that the exception. Now they took that out over this concern, you know, of the contact with the helmet. And so I really think it becomes hard to officiate and maybe even unrealistic. You know, I've kind of hated to say that there's ever been a rule that's unrealistic, but maybe in the tackle box it is unrealistic. But they're sending the signal that they want to reduce concussions. And, you know, you look at the game yesterday, there were a couple of other interesting things, Grant. Number one, on the hit that one of the hits that was called. Let's see, I had it in my notes. It was a helmet shot, and you know what you see? You saw the receiver get up, and he was groggy. He was concussed, and that's what they're trying to take out of the game. And so that's one thing that struck me. The other thing was, which I actually really did like, there were a lot of kickoff returns, and that's a big question. This is another player safety issue. With what they did with the kickoff rule, would it create less returns and therefore less violent collisions and less concussions? Or would it actually create more returns and less concussions? And when I watched this yesterday, I mean, unofficially here, I think I have nine kickoffs. Six were returned. I mean, that's a far cry, a higher number than what we've seen the last couple of years. And when you watch the play develop, it was fascinating because it was just like a punt. The receiving teams, they were giving ground to set up to block. There were no two-man wedges, which were illegal now, that started at the 10-yard line and went full force forward into collisions with kicking team members. It really did set up like a punt and may achieve exactly what the league wants there, which is more returns, less concussions. And I'm really interested in that rule because if, in fact, there are more concussions this year than last, be prepared to see the ball being put on the 25-yard line and have the kickoff be eliminated from the game totally. So I'm in the corner that is really hoping that concussions go down based on the new rule. And I know it's only one game,
right?
But that one game to me last night was pretty encouraging in that regard.
Oh, that's good to see. Mike, thanks for jumping on short notice. We had some talk on this. I had Chris Long on earlier from the Eagles. I've talked a lot about this with players and some coaches, and we wanted to get a take from the officials' perspective. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it, Mike.
You got it, Grant, anytime.
All right, that's Mike Pereira from Fox Sports. And I think he just hit the key. We're going to see a lot of inconsistency this year. And with inconsistency means upset fans. I get the coaches part, but we're talking about fans. All right? So just get used to it because your team, you're all right, it's going to happen this year where you're irate because of the inconsistency with the helmet rule that's going to cost your team that you root for a game. It's going to happen. You know it. I know it. Let's get ready for it. It is going to be part of the game, but it's not going away, as Mike said. And don't be surprised, as he said, if the kickoff changes in the near future. All right, we have an open segment. When we come back, we are going to get back to the phone calls at 800-636-8686. 1 hour left right here, the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.